Welcome to the March 2025 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear colleague, I don't like having to inform you, I told you so, about what I am going to share with you, and I take no pleasure from being a prophet of gloom either. However, if you read my column back in January, you may recall that I questioned the future of indoor boat shows, following the collapse of several important indoor events at that time. Now I have read the 2025 edition of the Dutch Indoor Show has been cancelled, and future editions of the Gothenburg Boat Show have been curtailed due to economic conditions. The announcement that this year's 64th Gothenburg Boat Show was the last is confirmation that we are indeed facing challenging times, particularly in the small boat sector. Tough economic conditions would also seem to be one of the reasons why three well-known and highly respected, long-standing British yacht brands have hit the headlines for the wrong reasons in recent months. I am referring to Princess Yachts, about 260 jobs were lost in late 2024, Sunseeker, around 100 people temporarily laid off in December, and Fairline, which fell into administration at the end of January just weeks after the business changed ownership. So, what's going wrong? Contrast this to the seemingly good fortunes of Sunreef Yachts. I had the privilege of being invited to visit their Gdansk shipyard in northern Poland recently to talk about paint coatings, and I witnessed a vibrant boat building business in full swing. On the day I visited the facility, I was lucky enough to watch, quite by chance, as the first 43-meter hull was lifted from the mold, a momentous day and achievement for the company. But is there another reason? I wonder why this business appears to be buoyant whilst some others are seemingly lagging and having to make harsh business decisions to stay afloat. Sunreef Yachts is headed by a visionary individual, Francis Lapp, who is the company's founder and CEO. It is plain to see he is clearly not only an innovator, but also fiercely passionate about boat building. I suspect it is boats first, finances second. My suspicion is that some other boat builders these days are driven primarily by constraints imposed by financial organizations on high that don't share such a deep passion about boat building, and who determine success or failure by the profit made and the balance sheet. In other news, I am delighted to inform you about the first IIMS London conference for some years, scheduled to take place for one day on the 13th of May 2025. The event has been kindly supported by A.R. Brink & Associates and EDOT Solutions. We have been fortunate enough to have attracted a heavyweight lineup of presenters, and I would encourage you to view the schedule and join us at the event, either in person or as an online delegate. Visit our website for more details. Last month, IIMS said goodbye to Rosie Webb after 3 years with the business, and we wish her well in her new role. I am pleased to welcome Alexandria, Alex, Ockenden to the team, who has replaced her in a slightly different role as web and social media administrator. Alex has a Master of Science in Digital Marketing and ABA Honours in Digital Media Production. Joining IIMS is her first proper office job, and we wish her success. In the previous month's newsletter, I introduced the concept of mentoring, something that IIMS is considering formalizing at this time, subject to sufficient mentors coming forward. The initial response has been encouraging, thank you, but if you missed this story last month, I encourage you to have a look and see if this is something for you. More details about how you can register your interest can be found in our February and March news bulletins. Until next month, survey well. For our first report, the International Marine Contractors Association has released a review of all the safety incidents and events reported last year. The 24 safety flashes covered 88 individual incidents or events shared by IMKA members. A further 33 incidents or events from information already in the public domain, from different trade bodies and or regulators, were shared as being of interest. Incidents include 27 line of fire events, 3 of which were lost time injuries. There were 10 hand, arm or finger injuries. All the LT is under line of fire were finger injuries. Hand and fingers injuries remains a concern, and looking closely at safety promotional material in this area will be a priority. 21 reports were incidents of bypassing safety controls, including unauthorized entry into confined space, misuse of tools, watertight doors left open, carriage of dangerous goods by vessel without proper certification, and approved safety devices being tampered with. 7 events were reported as safe mechanical lifting incidents and 6 events broke the working at height rule. There were also 6 incidents where failure of equipment was an immediate cause. Plus 13 reports on dropped or falling objects. You can read the full report at imca-int.com. Next, the United States Coast Guard has issued a safety alert after discovering counterfeit pilot ladders during a port state control examination at the Port of Baltimore. The identification plate on the ladder contains several errors, including referencing ISO 779-1 instead of the correct standard, ISO 799-1, and lacking the ISO 799-1 designation type. Additionally, while the serial number on the ladder matched the accompanying certificate, the number of steps and the length of the ladder did not align with the specifications listed on the certificate. The plate and certificate indicated that the ladder was produced by Qingdao Good Brother Marine Life Saving Appliance Company Limited, a company that manufactures SOLAS approved pilot ladders. However, in March 2019, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority identified counterfeit pilot ladders falsely bearing this company's name and SOLAS certification. The Coast Guard strongly recommends that ship owners and operators thoroughly inspect pilot ladders to ensure vessels are outfitted with genuine SOLAS approved equipment. And to verify certification details. Check for proper ISO approval numbers and ensure the specifications on the certificate match the actual ladder. Visit iimsusa.com to read the Marine Safety Alert. For our next story, the Republic of the Marshall Islands Maritime Administrator has released its report into the deaths of 3 crew members on bulk carrier Blue Cecil in 2023. The vessel's chief engineer, ETO, and fitter died after they were found unconscious inside of cargo hold number 1. Despite a rescue attempt, with all 3 being recovered from the hold, they were unresponsive and did not respond to CPR. A post-mortem examination by the Philippine authorities determined their deaths was asphyxia by suffocation. The following lessons learned were identified. First, entering a loaded cargo hold without authorization and without following established shipboard enclosed space entry and rescue procedures is extremely hazardous and should not be attempted. Second, physical boundaries are critical for preventing unauthorized access into an enclosed space. Third, enclosed space rescue procedures must be properly practiced and drills conducted as if they were a real emergency. And finally, stop work authority can prevent marine casualties. For stop work authority to be effective, crew members must not only be aware that they have this authority, but they must also have confidence that the authority is non-negotiable and can be exercised without fear of repercussion. They must also be as familiar with how to issue and respond to a stop work action or instruction as they are with their other shipboard duties. You can read the details at www.register-iri.com under the Library tab. Up next, the Liberia Maritime Authority has published a marine notice on compliance with the requirements for ships using low flashpoint fuel. Ships using low flashpoint fuel shall comply with the requirements of the IGF code, as amended. The IGF code, as amended, contains regulations to meet the functional requirements for the use of natural gas fuel. Requirements for the use of other low flashpoint fuels are under development at the IMO and will be added to the IGF code, as amended, once developed. Until such time that requirements for other low flashpoint fuels are developed, it must be demonstrated that the use of another low flashpoint fuel achieves compliance with the functional requirements of IGF code, as amended, and that an equivalent level of safety is maintained. You can read the notice in full at liscr.com/online library. Next, Transport Malta has released an investigation report into the boiler explosion on board oil chemical tanker Torque, resulting in the death of a crew member. On the 3rd of January 2024, Torque departed Argioi Theodoroi, Greece, after discharging part of its cargo of paraffin. The vessel was bound for Genoa, Italy, with an expected date of arrival of the 10th of January 2024. Shortly after departing from Argioi Theodoroi, the engineers changed over the boiler fuel consumption to very low sulfur fuel oil for both boilers. However, the starboard boiler failed repeatedly to start. Eventually, both boilers were restarted on low sulfur marine gas oil. On the morning of the 8th of January 2024, the engineers, in consultation with the master and chief officer, decided to change over the fuel consumption of the boilers from LSMGO to VLSFO. Just before 1400, the boiler fuel consumption was changed to very low sulfur fuel oil. Both boilers failed to fire because of low fuel oil temperature. Subsequently, the port boiler started working normally, but the starboard boiler failed to fire. Eventually, another attempt was made to restart it. While it was on the purge cycle, the second engineer went up to the burner platform to inspect it. At 1406, a loud explosion was heard and a fire started at the top of the starboard boiler. The fire alarm sounded within a few seconds. The engineers went up to the boiler platform to find the second engineer lying unconscious on top of the starboard boiler. The water mist system installed above the port boiler activated and the crew extinguished the fire with the help of portable extinguishers. The second engineer was carried outside onto the poop deck and placed in the dry provision room. The master sought medical advice from the company doctor and broadcast an emergency signal on the digital selective calling system. Although the crew members attempted CPR, the second engineer passed away at around 1450. The safety investigation believes that the cause of the explosion on boiler number 1 was excessive vaporized LSMGO inside the unit and the likely presence of unburnt LSMGO inside the boiler. You can read the full safety investigation report at msiu.gov.mt. Up next, the American Bureau of Shipping announced major changes to its 2025 survey after construction of offshore rules that became effective on the 30th of January this year. The new ABS rules for building and classing offshore units, offshore rules, consolidated and replaced the MOUFPINOI rules and incorporated mandatory requirements from facilities rules. You can read the new rules at iims.org.uk/news. Next, Lloyd's Register has provided a summary report on the recent IMO Ship Design and Construction Subcommittee. The summary looks at the 2011 ESP code amendments relating to RIT's safe return to ports, updates to the code on alerts and indicators 2009, URN, experience building phase, draft guidelines for use of fiber-reinforced plastics within ship structures, and draft interim guidelines for emergency towing arrangements for ships other than tankers. You can read the summary on our website. For our next report, DNV has launched a new family of class notations, autonomous and remotely operated ships, providing a framework for how auto-remote vessels can achieve equivalent or higher safety compared to conventional vessels. The family of class notations covers four specific functions for autonomous ships, including navigation, engineering, operational, and safety, and will also be distinguished by category and location of ship control. These definitions are in line with the current plans for IMO's upcoming mass code. The notations incorporate and build on DNV guideline for autonomous vessels, combining the guideline's broad risk assessment processes for the qualification of autonomous and remotely operated marine technologies with a set of functional requirements. The notation was launched in December and has been available since the 1st of January this year. In our next story, the International Association of Classification Societies has introduced new recommendations to enhance safety standards for surveyors, Recommendation 184. The new guidelines recognize that surveyors continue to face significant occupational health and safety risks at work. Key highlights of the guidelines include comprehensive risk management, increased focus on collaboration, fitness for work, fatigue management, empowering surveyors to use stop work authority, use of PPE, and standardized safety practices. You can read the full guidelines via our website. Next, Ocean Business 2025 has released details on its The Training and Demonstration Program. The three-day show, which runs from the 8th to the 10th of April at the National Oceanography Centre in Southampton, UK, is open to all visitors for free. Find out more at oceanbusiness.com. In our next report, the shipping industry is taking proactive steps to implement improved safety measures for transporting charcoal, ahead of mandatory IMO regulations in 2026, according to a press release from the World Shipping Council. In response to a series of devastating fires caused by improperly handled charcoal, shippers should be ready to see carriers phase in new tighter regulations this year. The new regulations require all charcoal shipments to be declared as dangerous goods under the International Maritime Dangerous Goods Code. There are also new treatment, packing, and stowage requirements for shipments of charcoal. The World Shipping Council, with IGP and INTT Club, have created a quick reference guide to ensure shippers are well informed about the changes. You can find out more at worldshipping.org/news. Up next, focusing on the West Coast of Canada, WestP&I Club has said recent clarifications from Transport Canada regarding ballast water discharge regulations have provided much-needed guidance for vessels operating in this region. According to the regulations, vessels heading to designated freshwater ports are required to adhere to strict ballast water exchange and treatment (E&T) protocols. This requirement aims to mitigate the risks associated with transporting aquatic species that could harm local habitats. Following inquiries from industry stakeholders, including Intertanko, Transport Canada has recently clarified that the E+T procedure is mandatory only for vessels travelling to specific freshwater ports, namely Kitimat, Stewart, and ports along the Fraser River. This distinction is crucial for ship operators, as it outlines where the most stringent regulations apply. Find out more at iimscanada.ca. For our next story, the Directorate General of Shipping, Mumbai, has issued a casualty circular into the death on board a tanker while undergoing repairs at berth. The circular highlights an incident on Indian registered tanker MT Patriot that resulted in the loss of one life and injuries to three shore contracted personnel on board. The casualties occurred due to an explosion inside the port side slop tank while cutting of nuts and bolts, using hot work, was being carried out on the inert gas line at the main deck. The tanker was undergoing repairs that included renewal of sections of the inert gas pipeline on main deck at the port of Chennai at repair berth since the 30th of October 2023 after taking the necessary permissions from port authorities and PESO. Repairs were ongoing on the boiler and hence additional repairs were planned on the deck area by the on-site team. On the 10th of November 2023 at 5 past midnight, there was an explosion followed by fire on the tanker while the repairs were being carried out near the vicinity of slop tank, which led to the fatality of one shore personnel and injuries to three others from the shore team. The vessel's tank dome and the internals of the cargo oil tank number 7 and slop tank were damaged and the main deck plating between frame number 49 and 50 were badly ruptured. Find out why it happened and read the recommendations at iimsindia.in, under the local news tab. Next, Lloyd's Register has awarded approval in principle to HD Korea Shipbuilding, an offshore engineering company limited, for its pioneering vacuum-insulated large-scale liquid hydrogen tank system. The successful testing of a large-scale vacuum chamber for this AIP also marked the world's first technical validation of large-scale LH2 tank insulation design. The vacuum insulation system addresses some of the most pressing challenges of using hydrogen in the maritime industry, the scalability of liquefied hydrogen storage and transportation of the fuel. Storing liquid hydrogen at -253 degrees centigrade while minimizing boil-off gas requires vacuum-insulated tanks similar to thermos flasks, but achieving this on a large scale in ships is technically unproven. HDKSOS vacuum system provides an innovative solution that drastically reduces the time required to achieve a vacuum in large tanks. For our next story, P&I Club Britannia has highlighted a Huatai Marine circular announcing the start of a special campaign against illegal entry into enclosed spaces on board ships. The 9-month campaign, launched by the China Maritime Safety Administration, began on the 15th of January and is intended to run until the 14th of October 2025. The campaign appears to target areas such as the crew awareness of the dangers of enclosed spaces, the identification and marking of enclosed spaces on board, the efficient and safe control of entry to enclosed spaces by permit, ensuring the onboard atmosphere testing devices are calibrated and in date, and that regular enclosed space rescue drills are conducted. Whilst all the targeted areas of inspection can be considered as standard onboard procedures and practices, Britannia is encouraging ships visiting China during this period to refresh and confirm their understanding of how this hazardous activity is properly controlled and managed onboard. For more information, visit iimsasia.asia. Next, IAKS has decided to launch its own CIC to record results of testing of emergency power supply on individual ships, according to Bureau Veritas. With the release of a bulletin on the subject, the Tokyo MOU has relevant parties of the potential risk of testing of automatic start of emergency source of electrical power and connection to the emergency switchboard using simulated blackout method. Having said that, IAKS has decided to launch its own CIC to record results of testing of emergency power supply on individual ships. This inspection campaign will last 12 months and started on the 1st of January this year and will examine the emergency power supply of the ship. A ship will be subject to only one inspection under this CIC during the period of the IAKS campaign. Read the full details at the Bureau Veritas website in the news section under Class and Statutory News. Up next, Lloyd's Register has introduced new non-mandatory CH clean hull supplementary characters to the ECO notation requirements in Part 7, Chapter 11 of Lloyd's Register's Ship Rules. One of the requirements for this ECO CH notation is that ships employ a system/technology approved by LR to clean/groom ship's hull, propeller, and niche areas, to monitor hull performance/vessel performance, as applicable using a service supplier or suppliers for conducting biofouling inspections, and in water hull cleaning from ALR service supplier approval scheme. End quote. Lloyd's Register's procedures for the approval of service suppliers have been updated to include the following new categories, covering activities related to resolution MEP C378-80, including service suppliers engaged in underwater biofouling inspections and service suppliers engaged in hull cleaning activities. In our next segment, the International Association of Classification Societies has released Recommendation 182 to support onshore power supply systems. The new recommendation provides detailed guidance on integrating onshore power supply systems into both new builds and retrofits, while addressing the technical and operational challenges associated with its implementation. You can find out more at iacs.org.uk/news. Another one from IAKS, which has released a new unified requirement for monitoring and safety functions for exhaust gas cleaning systems, M86. The following requirements apply to the arrangements intended for the safeguard of the ship in case of malfunction of the EGCS. The unified requirement covers the following arrangements including exhaust bypass, control and monitoring system, safety shutdown system and monitored parameters. Again, you can read the UR in full through our website. Next, Danish Shipping has adopted a new policy on biofouling management, where it recommends that its members follow IMO guidelines, which are currently not mandatory. So-called biofouling on the hulls of ships is not only a potential threat to vulnerable marine ecosystems, but it also causes increased fuel consumption when there are things stuck to the hull. Proper biofouling management reduces fouling, biosecurity risks, and fuel consumption. Danish Shipping recommends its members follow IMO guidelines and keep records of their adherence to the guidelines. And for our final report, Transport Malta has released a report into the death of a crew member following steam valve failure. On the 28th of January 2024, an able-bodied seafarer on board Chemical Hunter was severely scalded by steam. The accident happened during cargo tank washing and steaming operations. Chemical Hunter had just left the port of Altamira, Mexico when the accident occurred. The vessel returned to port where the injured crew member was transferred to a hospital. Despite the first aid given on board, and the more specialized treatment in hospital, the injured crew member succumbed to his injuries about 2 weeks after the accident. The safety investigation determined that the failure mechanism of the steam inlet valve to the cargo tank cleaning water heater was most likely to have been fatigue and that no sudden event precipitated the failure. When the steam valve failed, the AB was engulfed in a dense cloud of hot steam and consequently suffered severe burn injuries. He also suffered damage to his lungs due to hot steam inhalation. The Marine Safety Investigation Unit has recommended the company to verify the integrity of all the steam valves using NDT techniques and replace any valves, as necessary. Furthermore, the company has been recommended to circulate the findings of the safety investigation within its fleet. You can read the report at msiu.gov.mt. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.